Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Mikey, welcome to the Savage Nation. I know you've been waiting since Friday.
Blue Monday. Blue Monday.
Yeah, you've been waiting since Friday. I know that. Is there life without talk radio? I tried two straight days without television or radio. I almost went crazy. I got to tell you the truth is that once you're in the media, there's no way out of it. I mean, you may think you can get out of it. You can't leave it. It's impossible. How does anyone leave the media? Now, it is true that the reputed star of Two and a Half Men was dismissed today by Warner Brothers. That leaves only two people left on the show, and we don't know where their work is going to take them next. But we're all waiting to see where the half a man goes from here. The out-of-control guy who, without his father's money and connections, would just be, a bimbo in the streets of Los Angeles living in a dumpster. And speaking of people living in a dumpster, there's a rumor going around radio that there are people calling into certain shows that are paid to do so. Now, I'm going to show you right now, first of all, before I start this discussion, that I do not, nor does my syndicator, pay anybody to call my show to pretend that they're calling in to, create any startling kind of reactions. But we learned that there actually are people who are hired as actors who are auditioning for a company called Premier On Call, and then they join a roster of ready-to-work actors, and they're paid $40 an hour, and they call in, allegedly, some real great shows out there, such as Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, and Sean Hannity, allegedly. Now, I can't believe this is true, so we looked into this. We know that the people who are putting out the story are left-wing fanatics. This story that, you know what I'm talking about yet? Ladies and gentlemen, let's start from the top. This is the Savage Nation. It's Monday. We just played Blue Monday by Fats Domino. We are talking about an alleged scandal that some of the top conservative shows in radio, or they're all top, all the shows in radio that are top are conservative. You got Rush number one, Hannity number two because he filled in for him and the wall banger, got lucky. And then I'm number three. And then, of course, the hemorrhoid, we know where he's going, Mr. Blackboard. But the fact is, I don't use callers, that I pay for. But the question is, if this is true, where did this originate from? So we looked into this story, and it turns out that Premier Radio does have an audition request form online, and you could fill it out with your voice information. Please describe your voice, include local or native accent. Adjectives might include gruff, light, clean, crisp, high, deep, textured. And then you request an audition to audition for Premier Radio. And then if you pass, you get paid to call Rush Limbaugh, allegedly, and Wallbanger, and whichever question they give you. Well, here's what they say. It says, Premier On Call is our new custom caller service. We supply voice talent to make your on-air calls, improvise your scenes, or deliver your scripts. Using our simple online booking tool, blah, 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 especially the kind of voice you need. And unless you request it, you won't hear the same voice again for at least 2 months, ensuring the authenticity of your programming for avid listeners. So if this is true, this is quite scandalous. Michael Harrison, the editor of Talkers magazine. Talkers is the talk radio world's leading trade publication. So Harrison of Talkers said he knew nothing of this particular service, but was not altogether surprised to hear that it was in place. There was, he said, a tradition of creating fake phone calls for the sake of entertainment on some of the funny shows, shock jock shows, in other words, blah, blah, blah. In other words, like a Howard Stern show. So we looked into the people putting out this rumor, and it came originally from a so-called Jewish website called Tablet. And whenever I hear a website, a Jewish website, I know right away it's usually a left-wing fanatic. And we looked into this grin. Sure enough, the contributors to this website that put out this story about fake callers are all left-wing fanatics. You've got Victor Navasky, who was once a publisher of The Nation magazine, which is a communist publication, and he's now publisher emeritus, so that fits. The author of the article is Leil Leibovitz. And this man apparently spends more time playing video games than he does drinking coffee. So in other words, you've got left-wing fanatics attacking the conservatives again. Therefore, there's no reason to call me. At 3:30 today, meaning 6:30 on the East Coast, meaning 9:30 in Bolivia and 12:30 at night in Iraq, Donald Trump will be on the Savage Nation today. And speaking of Libya, we heard that the president took a time out from his golf game this weekend to make a pronouncement about the atrocities being committed by Reverend Farrakhan's good friend Muammar Gaddafi. And the golfing president said that if the Libyan president does not cease using warplanes against defenseless civilian targets, he will never play golf in Libya again. The president said, in fact, that the nation might just be considered a vast sand trap for American troops. And by the way, to all you pot smokers out there, how's the ganja from Kenya? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I don't expect callers. I'm going blind. Actually, I'm doing things right now to make sure you don't call me. I could load these lines up right now. You want to hear what I could do to load these lines up? I'll give you three things I could ask. But I'm afraid to even joke about it because I know what happens. If I brought up the questions about, but you see, I know, Beowulf, you know what's going to happen the minute I do this, right? Shall I even tell them what I'm not going to do? Because then they'll do it. Okay, we get flooded every day with Ron Paul fanatics. That's number one. Every day we get flooded with Bertha calls. We don't take them. Boring, bad radio. Okay, that's number one. So if you're a Ron Paul fanatic or a Bertha caller, please, can you do us a favor and leave the lines open for a legitimate caller? It doesn't mean that you don't have a valid point, but I'm not going to cover it. That would be like me covering abortion or reloading ammunition. I mean, if I wanted to load the lines up, all I got to do is start talking about reloading 30-06 rounds in my basement, which I don't do, right? The minute I get into that, that's the end of the show. Or abortion, various techniques used around the world. We don't do that. There go the lines. I knew it. The minute I said what I wouldn't do. You know what I was doing during the before the show started is I have a family friend that's flying right now. I love going on flightaware.com. Like, I see that they're over Texas. They just had lunch. It's like a 6-hour, 5-hour, 21-minute flight. I like to see the fare. The fare, it says, you know when you go on Flight Tracker, you could follow, like, friends and relatives as they're flying across the country? It's the big Boeing 767 with a sleeper seat. I hear they're great. I've never been on one because either I don't travel at all or I travel in another manner altogether. If I could, I'd travel by private railroad coach. The problem is they don't go anywhere I want to go, and all the railroad stations are in the bad part of town. You know, I mean, they were built at another time, right? But I have thought about getting my own. Oh, now I'm going to get railroad car people. Yeah, Mike, we did it. Millie and I did it. It was wonderful. We had a heck of a time. We took all the Viagra with us, doing that, blah, blah, blah. But so anyway, you look at it, it says fare, $54.80 to $2,780.80. How do you get a fare for $54 when a jerk next to you is paying $27.80 full fare? Then it says business. In dinner, you get dinner if you fly business, and in the economy, food for sale. They're selling food on planes now? Are you kidding? I have not flown commercial in so long, I don't even know. They're selling meals on an airplane? What do they got, like people like with a cart, like souvlaki? Why don't they just open it up to various cart vendors on the, you know, like a guy from Kenya could be selling birth certificates, and another cart could be selling. That's becoming quite a scandal. The governor of Hawaii says, first I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Then he fires the health director because the health director wouldn't get to the bottom of it, if you know what I know I'm going to get Bertha calls. Please don't. There's nothing to be gained by it. And by the way, how's the ganja from Kenya? Oh, yeah, what a world. Libya's burning and the president's golfing. But as I say, Donald Trump will be on in exactly 20 minutes. And I have some questions for him. I shouldn't tell you my questions, but if you have a question for Donald Trump, who apparently has a higher approval rating than Mitt Romney and Tim Pawlenty, who? Tim who? How could they run a guy no one ever heard of? I'm going to tell you right now. I can see the handwriting on the wall. Frankly, I think Donald Trump could beat Obama in 2012 if he really ran. But I personally don't know if he is going to run. Other than that, I think that Obama's president in 2012. I lay odds right now he wins again because I could see the fix coming. I could see it from a mile away. They got McCain lined up ready to take the fall or some other schmendrick like the guitar player from Fox News, Huckabee, Puckabee, Muckabee, Huckabee, Schmuckabee. I saw Schmuckleberry last night on Fox News with the leprechaun. They were bending over backwards to say what a wonderful patriot Obama was. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Oh, leprechaun has become such a naked, slavish sycophant of Obama, it's frightening. Ah, those people. We know he was born in Hawaii. And come on. Come on. We know that he's a patriot. How could you even question him about that? Come on now. So then Huckleberry Schmuckleberry, Huckleberry Duckleberry, and Duckleberry says, well, he says, oh, I don't question his patriotism either. But I challenge his policies, and I have a new book out, too. It's How to Play the One-String Guitar and Get Away with It. I'll be right back.
Savage.
At the Hop. Oh, did I love this song many a moon ago. I intend to outlast all my enemies in radio. You know that everyone in... I got to say this to you. I shouldn't boast because tomorrow's... Sheen just got the boot. And as I told you, Lin Yutang, one of my favorite authors, he's been dead a long time. I never personally met him. He wrote that, happiness consists in watching your neighbor fall off the roof. Now, what he meant by that, of course, metaphorically, is that you like the other man's misfortune. And since I've had my share of misfortune in the media... owing to George Soros and his ilk. It's a pleasure to see a leftist get the shaft. Sheen gets the boot, says the move is effective. Immediately shows. So 2.5 men is over, at least for the half a man, and the other two we don't know where they're going to go. But they finally got rid of the crackpot. And the crackpot over the weekend said the only person he really liked to be for a few minutes is Sean Penn. I said, hey, that's some compliment. Man, you really need a compliment like that coming from Charlie Sheen. But, they've been buddies a long time. They see the world the same way, which is sort of through a purple haze, you know? So Vandersloot to plead guilty. Vandersloot. He really did it? He was eerie, that guy, right? I'm into crime now. I don't want to do politics immediately because we have Donald Trump on and I'll do it then. Vandersloot to plead guilty. Like Vandersloot. Remember Vandersloot? That was a big story years ago. And the Peruvian woman slaying. I see. He didn't admit to the Natalie Holloway Aruba job. He killed a young Peruvian in a fit of rage. Oh, what a psycho. There are bad men out there. I mean, with women. I never met guys who beat women. Because guys who do that hang out with each other? And guys who are not like that, like nice guys like me. I don't know anybody who beat women. Because... It's funny, as a kid, you wouldn't hang around with a woman beater or a slapper, because if you did, the women you like would never even want to know you. I mean, I've read about this. It's crazy, the whole thing, the whole beating thing. I didn't come from a beating family. No hitting. It was far worse. I would rather he gave me a beating than the mental control. I told you about that, right? It's easy to give a kid, give him a pat on the behind and to give him a mental job. It's easier for a kid. You ask any doctor, it's the truth. Otherwise, you wind up a talk show host. Look what happens to people. look, you got to laugh at yourself and the rest of the world if you're yourself. I don't. You do. Personally, I don't. I never laugh at myself. I take myself very seriously. I laugh at you. Oh, you telling me? I tell you. You laugh at me, I laugh at you. I feel giddy today. What's wrong with me? Why do I feel good? Something's wrong. I'm on a new diet. I'm like on an applesauce diet. Can I tell you what happened? I don't know what's going on. I feel so good I'm frightened. It's almost like the old Buddy Hackett joke. Remember that old story in the 50s? If you remember Buddy Hackett, he said he went in the army. They put him in the Fort Dix and they put him on an army diet. And for the first time in his life, he didn't have a nausea or a headache. He went to the doctor, but he didn't know what was because he didn't know what was wrong with him. That's the way I feel today. I swear to you, I don't know what's wrong. I don't want to drink. I don't even want alcohol right now. It's like I feel like I think the Charlie Sheen thing. I don't even want to touch a beer. It's so ugly. What happens to a human mind from drugs? Ladies and gentlemen, take a look at a person melting down in front of the world. We'll do the politics eventually when Donald Trump comes on. Now I'm going to get calls about OPEC and drilling. I know we should drill and build a... I know we should get... We should put yellow cake uranium reactors all around America. Absolutely. Yellow cake reactors. You want me to get serious? Use my brain? You want me to get serious now and use my mind on a Monday afternoon? I'm not so sure I'm in the mood. Look at the headlines on the New York Post. National thermometer poll shows men get hot for Chris Christie, women for Michelle Obama. Now, I don't even have a comment to make on that because any man who would get hot for Chris Christie and any woman who would get hot for Michelle Obama, I don't want to know. Let's put it to you that way. Symbol shot. Ka-kung. Why is this every day now? I read about scam artists. Weepy lawyer Jonathan Bristol set to plead guilty in Kenneth Starr's $33 million scam. Could you believe, how do they rip off so much money from idiots? How did so much excess occur during the Bush administration that so many gonoffs popped up out of the gutter? Most of them started in gutters in Brooklyn and the Bronx. They became lawyers, either high-level or low-level lawyers, and then they went into some business where people gave them money. How did this happen under Bush? That so many people were ripped off under Bush with scams. How is this possible? I'd like to know the answer to that. How did Bush and the Republicans create a climate? Not that they were con men. We know that the whole Republican Party were con men, the K Street Party. I know this is blasphemy to those of you who don't know what to think. But how did they get away with it, taking people's money? Who would give a person their money, number one? I'd rather make no interest than give anyone my money.
Savage.
Money, 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 money. It's the Savage Nation blasting out across America. 8 to 10 million listeners a week. Ratings are through the roof. Joining us now is Donald Trump, who everyone says is going to run. He's saying he doesn't know yet. He certainly can't say yet because he's got a TV show that he said is up front. His TV show has to run through it before he can make an announcement. But the fact is, he's doing a lot of media, and he's with us now on the Savage Nation. Donald Trump, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael.
Well, first of all, I got to be perfectly clear. Donald Trump is the owner of the club, you know, Mar-a-Lago. He's the boss of the club that I'm a member of, right?
That's exactly right.
I mean, we have to disclose that, Donald, right?
A member in good standing, right?
I haven't been there since you made me a member in January, but I'm in good standing.
You better.
Mrs. S was there this weekend, though. She said she saw you.
Who was there?
Mrs. S.
Oh, that's right. And beautiful. Very good. I'm impressed.
Please, you're married. Stop it.
Very nice. I'm very proud of you, Michael. That's great. Yeah, that's true.
Coming from you, that's a very fine compliment. But, Donald, look, let's start at the top. I ask someone I respect as a young man who's very wealthy, what would you ask Donald Trump? I'm talking someone in their 40s, right, who's made a fortune on their own, your kind of guy, right?
Right.
And here's what he said to me. He says, does the average American person now hate a rich person? Do they hate rich people? Has society made being successful evil, and how would you change this perception?
Well, I don't think so. I think that in my case, at least in my case, I have great support. You know, you saw the ratings for the Celebrity Apprentice last night, and they were great, and to put it mildly. And I don't know if you saw that. And not only CNN last week came out with a poll where I was the only one tied with Obama, but today or yesterday.
And you were born in America.
Excuse me?
You were born in America on top of it all.
On top of it, I was born in America. And NBC, as you know, just yesterday came out with a poll, and they had me leading every Republican. So I think that probably if you're rich but use that wealth to create jobs and to do lots of good things, which I've done, I think people really like you.
Right. Like how many jobs have you created is a very good answer. You know, let's look at this clearly. You're not a guy who made your money through a hedge fund or let's say in pure speculation and gambling against the currency. You didn't do any of that.
No, I didn't. No, I don't.
All right. So, but Donald, when you build a building like Trump Tower, how many construction workers were? Can you estimate had a job?
But if you look at what I've done over the years with all of the things that I have built, and you know, I always talk about China because they're taking away, they're making all our products. Well, I've made a lot of products. I mean, I've made mostly building products, but I've made other things too, whether it's clubs, et cetera, et cetera. And
right.
I've employed tens of thousands of people over the years, and today I have thousands of people, many thousands of people working for me. But when I build a building and you have 1,000 construction workers doing one building, and I built many, many buildings over the years, you know, I've employed tens of thousands of people over the course of my career. So,
well, I ask this question because this is going to, you know, that your enemies, once you announce, if you announce, you know, whenever you do, if you do, you know, they're going to start in with the trying to bait you with the rich stuff. And I think this is a very important question that no one's asked you yet.
Well, I think it's important, but I really think that maybe they're a different rich. I mean, you do have rich where they make money by picking a stock, and then the stock market gets lucky, and it goes up, and all of a sudden
yes.
they make a lot of money.
Yes.
That's never been my thing. My thing is building buildings. I buy a piece of land. I get the zoning. I hire thousands of people in some cases to build a development, and people like me. And I put a lot of people, you know, you talk about health care and Obamacare. Well,
right.
I've had Trump care because I've taken care of a lot of people's health care, a lot of people's education, and made life good for a lot of people that worked very hard.
Well, you're very conservative by what I have heard on virtually every issue. You're pro-military. You know what China's doing to us. You know how to deal with tough business people who are not exactly playing, let's say, by the Marcus of Queensbury rules, which to me is a very big plus in the world we live in.
Right.
We need someone who knows how to negotiate in plain English instead of one of these guys who went to Yale who never really had to get their hands dirty. Now, you're topping Romney and Pawlenty in a poll, and I could see you beating Pawlenty because, frankly, between me and you, with all, I don't know the man. I don't think he's electable. That's number one.
Okay.
Romney is a force. If you debated with someone, Mr. Trump, would you go for the jugular in a debate?
Well, I think it depends on who I'm debating or you want to know the truth. I actually think it's harder to get the nomination, and I'm one in the minority on this. It's harder to get the Republican nomination than it is to beat Obama, if you want to know the truth.
I agree 100%. Because, you know, remember last time what they did? Remember Romney was beating McCain, and then there was some shenanigans behind closed doors, and they made McCain the lead figure, and he was the candidate. That made no sense to us on the outside.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know exactly what happened, but I will tell you, I just feel instinctively it's harder to get the Republican nomination than it is to beat Obama. I think that I would be really well-positioned if I decided to run, and I'll make that decision by June, but I will be really well-positioned to beat Obama. I think getting the Republican nomination, even if the competition doesn't look that tough, frankly, I think in its own way may be more difficult.
Well, here's a question then. If you didn't get the Republican nod, I know it's kind of a no-winner here. Would you run in a third party?
Well, I'd have to think about that, but the weakness to that would be if you did that, you'd probably assure, because,
yeah.
you know, the polls are so strong. The polls say that as an independent, I'd get well over 20% of the vote.
Right.
That would probably assure, because I'm more conservative than most of the Republicans that are running. So
right.
that would, this wouldn't be like a liberal, ultra-liberal Republican running that could hurt Obama. I'm a very conservative person, especially when it comes to the military and things as such, and
yes.
that would assure Obama's victory.
Yes, so, absolutely. Remember that guy from Texas, and I don't mean any disrespect to
I swear I ruled that out.
Remember he ran as a third-party candidate. Everyone loved him, but all he did was give Clinton the win. I mean, the third party usually throws the election to the opposite side.
That's the problem. So, actually, you're the first one to ask me that question because, you know, I'm a Republican, I'm running as a Republican, and I haven't given it a lot of thought, but the advantage would certainly go to Obama if I did that because I think almost every vote would come out of the conservative Republican group.
Well, let's talk about it for another minute. My audience is not primarily a Republican audience. It's an independent audience, and the largest number of people in America today are, as you know, Mr. Trump, are not affiliated with either party.
It's true.
They're tired of party politics. The largest number of voters now identify themselves as independent. I'm not so sure that there aren't Democrats or ex-Democrats who wouldn't vote for you, by the way.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because I've studied this very carefully and looked at it very carefully. And at some point, you know, maybe I'll have to make a decision. We'll have to see. But when Ross Perot won, ran, he got 18% of the vote. But until he sort of self-destructed, which he really did, with the dogs and the wedding and the whole thing, I mean, it was crazy. And then he dropped out, and then 2 days later he goes back into the race. I mean, he got 18% of the vote. He was up to 30-some-odd percent of the vote at one point. And then he, obviously, his campaign sputtered, to put it mildly, very badly.
Yes.
And he did some very foolish things. I mean, he dropped out, and then he came back in a short time later. And frankly, that was a disaster. But he also said certain things that were not too good. So he still got 18% of the vote. Problem is, if I get 18% of the vote, and I think I'd get a lot more than that, according to the polls, if I ran as an independent, I'd get a lot more. I do believe almost every one of those votes comes out of the Republican Party. No matter how you got it. Now, that doesn't mean I don't get more than the Republican, and maybe more than the Democrat, meaning Obama, I assume.
No, but I understand, but you throw it back to Obama, and we don't want that. We need to save the country from the man's disastrous policies, which leads us right to today's news. Here we have the Middle East burning, we have Libya on fire, and he's playing golf. Now, I have nothing against golf. You own many golf clubs. But if you were president, would you take a side in the Libyan debacle?
Well, you know, I've been watching the Middle East self-destruct, and it's an amazing process. And at one point, I was saying, you know, I hate to see a Holocaust. I mean, I hate to see what's happening where planes are shooting people down in the desert.
Yes.
You know, they're walking into the desert. They have a little rifle, and you have a MiG. You have a plane coming in and just shooting the hell out of the people and really destroying lives and just absolutely killing thousands and thousands of people.
Yes.
On a humanitarian basis, if you could save a lot of people without getting involved in the war, because the last thing we need to do now, you know, I want to build America. I don't want to build Libya on top of Afghanistan and on top of Iraq, which, by the way, will never be. They're not buildable because as soon as we build it, you know, we build a highway, then we build a school. 2 days later, it's blown up and we start building again. I'd like to build our country. I'm tired.
Thank you. No, I agree with you. We need some infrastructure here.
Absolutely. I'm tired of watching these fools trying to build countries that are not going to allow you to build them. So the last thing we need is another. But I will say, on a humanitarian basis, when I see planes shooting people, innocent people, all over the place, I mean, just thousands. You know, you have no idea. They talk about 2,000 people. I'll bet you it's 100,000 people. It would be nice to at least put a one-day or a two-day halt to that with our great planes and our great pilots.
Absolutely. I mean, if we had Reagan, I can guarantee you they'd be flying with a no-fly zone already.
Well, he did something that people tend to forget. It's called Lockerbie, Pan Am Lockerbie. And when he did that, you know, it's like a whole – it's like a whole different ball game. I mean, that was unbelievable. So when you go after them, you can remember more than what's happening now. You can also remember what happened to Pan Am and Lockerbie, Scotland.
Of course. So Gaddafi's a certifiably bad guy and wouldn't take too much of our military assets. We have the carriers to launch F-18s. They could create a no-fly zone almost instantly without doing very much. I mean, we have the carriers there. We have 10 aircraft carriers. And Donald, each aircraft carrier, I was aboard the Stennis about 2 years ago, each aircraft carrier has a bigger air force than most countries on Earth.
Absolutely.
What are they for but to stop a humanitarian crisis like this?
There's incredible power that we don't use. We're not respected as a country. I will tell you this. When they let the guy go in Scotland, when they let him go because he was going to die the following week of cancer,
right
now he's living and he's probably playing golf with Obama maybe, but when they let him go, and that was well over a year ago, and I hear he's doing very well. The word is he's doing very well. I say, what the hell is going on? Wouldn't it be wonderful to go get him and put him back in the pen where he belongs?
Good luck. We knew it was a fake at the time on this show.
I mean, somehow, I said that.
Nothing passes my eye here. Come on. I'm the guy in the second-story window. You know what I mean? I look down on the world. Donald Trump on the Savage Nation. You want to stay on another break and take some calls? All right, listen. Folks, again, here's your opportunity. Donald Trump's not easy to talk to. If you get through my call screener, you get to ask an intelligent question. Don't ask him how he is. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. We're speaking with Donald Trump, who is answering your questions, and I've asked Mr. Trump about rich people, and do people resent the rich today? And he said there's a big difference between those who speculate and make their money in that way and don't provide any jobs, and people like himself who have and do provide thousands of jobs, and I think that's the core. And as far as his politics, he doesn't hide it. He doesn't play the middle. And he is conservative. He's very pro-military. And the fact is that we need someone tough enough to stand up to our adversaries without going to war. And I personally think that he's the man to do it. Donald Trump, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thank you very much, Michael.
Let's go to the callers because they're the best and they're the voters as well.
Okay.
And we'll start with WOR in New York. Joe, go ahead. Fire away. Question,
hello,
please.
Hello, Donald. Yes, this country is so blessed, and I totally agree with you. With natural resources, we have coal and oil and gas for hundreds of years. And for some reason, we're not utilizing those resources here. We're not providing those jobs. I totally agree with you. I think an investigation should be made, for example, why the environment...
Well, hold on. Please don't call with an investigation. Tell us what your question is, please.
Okay. Well, the question is, why aren't we utilizing our resources? Why aren't we mining? Does it have something to do with maybe the disaster?
All right. That's a fair question. Mr. Trump, answer.
Well, I think the environmentalists have really made it very, very difficult. You know, when I go to China, I see them building cities, and they don't even get an environmental impact study. I see them filling in little tiny pieces of the ocean, like 5 miles by 5 miles. And when I asked, how long did it take you to get the permits, they don't even understand what I'm talking about, because they start literally the following week, and they say, Donald, it's the ocean. This is the ocean. It's so big.
In other words, what nature didn't finish, we will.
And you know, it's interesting, if we ever did it, they'd give you the electric chair for even suggesting that we...
I know. What's interesting in what you just said from the Chinese perspective, it's very, very intriguing when you consider there's just a geological twist of fate that there is a bay or that there is an estuary. I mean, I'm a boater and an environmentalist in a sense. I'm a conservationist, so I love the wildlife, and I have done everything I could to protect it all of my life. But it's a very interesting way to look at things.
Well, it's really gotten out of control. And you look at the Gulf of Mexico, they can't drill. I mean, they're stopping drilling now. And what we need is we need help. We need oil. We need the derivatives of oil. Well, look, it's hard to believe that this is happening to this country. It's really hard to believe.
No, it is. It's terrible. I mean, how could a country this big be kicked around like this for so long by so many little countries that yesterday were begging us for a handout, and today they're slapping us around?
Well, they view our leaders as very not smart people. I'm going to be nice. I don't want to use the word stupid. They view our leaders as not smart. They take advantage of us. They laugh at us. And I have dinner with these people, and they can't believe, people from China, people from other countries, they can't believe what they're able to get away with our country.
But is it, you know, here's the question that I, as an outsider, don't understand. You run in the in circles of the most powerful men on earth. I don't. I'm basically a loner, okay? The truth, I'm not trying to be facetious here. These guys who become leaders are not stupid. They use people to get where they are. If they're not stupid and they're not weaklings, why do they behave that way once they're in power?
Because I really believe the lobbyists in Washington have a big impact. If you look at OPEC, they hire so many of our lobbyists that if you want to get a lobbyist to go against OPEC, there are none because they pay them all. If you look at what OPEC has, if you look at what China has, if you look at what these countries have in terms of lobbyists, and these lobbyists get familiar with a certain little group of politicians, but when you add up all the lobbyists, they have them all under control. Because it's hard to believe they can allow some of the things to happen to this country that is happening. How does China get away with what they're doing? How does OPEC get away with what OPEC does? I really believe it's the lobbyists, because you're right, they're not stupid people, our politicians.
No.
But they act like they're stupid people.
Yes.
And the only thing I can think of is the lobbyists take care of them.
Well, that's what I conclude, which is they do what they're told, and that brings us back to you. Even when I was a poor young man, Donald, I used to say, you know, I'd rather vote for a rich guy who made his money honestly because he's not in it for the money. And people would say to me, you know, that makes sense. I had a sort of concept that rich was good if the person made the money honestly. They weren't in the business of being the leader to rip everybody off. I think that's not a bad way to look at it, frankly.
Well, you know, I will tell you that if I decide to run and if I win, there's nobody's going to give me $10,000, or there's nobody going to give me a meal and influence me. I can tell you that. I'm going to do
it. Yeah, right. You're not doing it for a cardigan from Scotland.
I'm going to do what's right. If I decide to run, I will do, and win, I will do what's right for this country, and I'll put the ability, and I have an ability. I've always had an ability to make money. I'd put that ability to this country. And you know what? If this country, if you view it that way, if we become prosperous again, and we're just the opposite right now, you don't have to worry about Social Security and health care and lots of other things, because it'll automatically take care of itself. Because what
you want to hear a dream ticket? A Trump-Allen West ticket. Now, of course, I'm not here to pick your vice presidential candidate because you haven't even announced. But, I mean, the logic would be to have a woman like Michelle Bachmann. But could you imagine if we had a war hero like Allen West, and you say, well, why should that happen? Because, I'm thinking out loud. You got to forgive me for that. That's part of my charm. But, you know, it's a very important thing. Remember what the vice presidential pick has often destroyed a candidacy, incidentally.
Well, they can certainly hurt it, but I will tell you, I met Allen West, and I really liked him a lot. And, you know, the other candidate that was running against him, who's been there for a while, thought it was going to be an easy race. And when he heard the militaristic attitude of Allen West, they played that up, how military, you know, how tough he was.
Yes.
And Allen ended up winning the election. I mean, it was...
And that was even in a liberal area of Florida. I talked with Allen about that. That he was polling even high numbers in very liberal areas because guess what? America respects their war heroes. Anyway, Donald Trump, I know you got to run. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I've seen you. I've heard you on other shows, and I was getting a little neglected. I felt like I was left out of the club all of a sudden.
No, you'll never be neglected, Michael, never.
I wish you luck in all your endeavors, and I thank you for being with us on the Savage Nation. Always a pleasure. I'll be right back to take your calls on all the other topics and all the news of the day right here on the Savage Nation on your local affiliate. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The sights and sounds of the Savage Nation. Actually, it's only the sound. I do not have any lipstick or any such attributes that they have on Fox News, so it's strictly thoughts and my voice. And I can assure you of one thing. All of my callers are amateurs. None of them are hired to call the show. We just had Donald Trump on the show, and it's an interesting... I thought it was a very interesting interview. For a number of reasons, and I'll tell you the main reason, is I'm a pretty straightforward guy. I didn't write the questions up. And he didn't pause. His answers were straight out. Now, I want you to compare the way he answered some of these questions as opposed to one of the stiffs. Let's add a stiff on like Romney or Polenti. You know what you'd get. You'd get a stiff, rigid, you know, teleprompter answer. I'm tired of it. That's why I don't have any guests. And I got another big treat for you coming up. At the turn of the hour, we have Michelle Bachmann on. I mean, come on now. This show is going to be this show's booming. I mean, first of all, the ratings are up, which is interesting year to year, while many other shows are down. I know why. But I think, separate story, but I think it's going to be my biggest year ever. The thing keeping me going now is I got to get through the election of 2012. I've got to make sure Obama loses. That's number one. If you say, what's my professional goal? Anybody but Obama. Anybody but Obama. That's number one. I have a novel coming out in August or September from St. Martin's Press. I'm working around the clock on it. Okay? It's amazing. The story is so good that when I reread it and reread it and reread it, I kind of get chills sometimes. and I'm not going to tell you any more about it. It's a political thriller loosely based on someone being banned in England and being screwed by his own government. And yes, Teddy is not in it. There's a character named Eddie who's an 11-pound gray poodle. Other than that, there's nothing autobiographical in the book whatsoever. But I want to see it on the big screen. I don't know who's going to play Teddy yet in the book. I may be Teddy's agent. I actually want to see my dog in the movie, the movie version of the. You know what it's called, by the way? Abuse of Power. Great title! So if you want to do politics, we can do it. You know, you want to talk general, whatever. You see any good movies lately? I saw a good movie over the weekend. I forgot it already. I'm getting blind from watching TV at night. I'll tell you the truth. It's a great relaxation for me. You know what's the most underestimated health promoter in the world? I'll tell you, television, in a certain way. And you say, come on, Mike, you must be kidding. No, I don't mean cable news. I'm telling you that I found a long time ago, you know, I'm going back to like the 70s when they were bumper stickers, and I found one once on a refrigerator somewhere, I don't know where. It said, when in doubt, get horizontal. You know those cute sayings, right? I swear it works for me every time. If I get stressed out, I go in a dark room, usually my bedroom, I lock the door, load the guns, release the dogs around the property, and I watch a movie. Or I lay in the dark, a dark room for 20 minutes. It's the most restful thing I could do is lie in a dark room. I learned this a long time ago. It's cut out all input into your brain. You know your brain uses up about 20% of the blood sugar energy in your body at any one time? You didn't know that much, you know, energy requires to think. So anyway, I don't want to talk about health. You know what I'm saying? What's the point? You look at Nat Geo, what's the point of living altogether? That's why I don't believe in it. I say, how could you, as a trained scientist with a PhD from the University of California, how could you say you don't believe in Nat Geo's view of the world? 29 million years ago, 46 million years ago, 180 million years ago, there was nothing but muck. And out of the muck, there crawled a distinctly ugly, smelly little creature that had no head, nothing but a tail that slithered out. And the next thing you knew, here we are. I'll tell you why I don't believe that's true. Now, I studied evolution. Here we go again. This is as good as Ron Paul callers or Bertha calls, but I don't want to deal with this. Because I do lay awake at night and say, what's the point of struggling if in the eons of history, millions of years, why should I motivate myself anymore? I've written all these books. I've achieved all these things. I've climbed all these mountains. What am I doing this for? What am I trying to prove? Who cares what I do anyway? And so you go back to all this vanity, right? I think it's Ecclesiastes wrote, all his vanity. I knew him personally. He wasn't a bad guy. He could make a good corned beef sandwich at the same time he had philosophy that wasn't bad as well. He'd make you a sandwich and tell you all his vanity. Old Ecclesiastes ran a great deli in old Palestine. But the point I'm making is there can be evolution as a concept coexisting with the creation of man and all of the animals on the earth by God. I had this discussion once with a religious scholar on this show who really floored me with his answer. He was extremely religious, and he said, Michael, it says in the Bible, and God created the world in 7 days. How could you believe that, people say, unless you were a child or a Republican? I mean, that's the joke that goes around in you know, snotty liberal circles where all their children wind up drug addicts, okay, or behaving like Charlie Sheen. They wonder why. You raise a child without any belief. You know what the child's going to wind up doing? They're going to believe in drugs. They're going to believe in alcohol. They're going to believe in rampant sexuality. Because if you don't believe in anything, if you don't believe there are any consequences or any meaning to your life, what do you think a child's going to do? A child must be given a religious upbringing, a belief in something. I don't say you become a fanatic, okay? That's how I see it. So anyway, so he said to me that our concept of time is different than God's sense of time. And so when God said, and the world was created in 7 days, a day to God could have been 10 million years. A day to God could have been a million years. So it could mean, and God created the world in 7 million years. Or God created the world in 70 million years. And I said, you know what? Even though the numbers don't really work or add up, I'll take it. Since it's all a mystery, listen to how my logical mind works. My highly developed, super evolved mind, look how it works. Even though that answer is incomplete, and even though that answer is not intellectually perfect, I'll take it. How do you like that? I don't go for the Nat Geo we started from a worm crawling in the ground. I'm sorry. May you speak for yourself, Johnson. If you think you descended from a worm, good luck to you. Now I know why you behave that way. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'm just having a good time today. I told you something's wrong. I think I know what it is. Instead of eating bread for breakfast, I had broccoli. I know you say, well, how'd you get there? And I tried something new. I said, you know, you wrote all these books on nutrition, right? Well, go back to eating living foods and whole foods. I mean, they're not crazy. You wrote books about this years ago. You know, when I started to analyze virtually everything I eat is dead. Everything I eat is dead. Everything I eat is like emaciated and dead and disgusting. The chicken is like a gray thing in a package before I cook it. It's been there. My relatives, I was a little boy in the Catskill Mountains. They go to a live poultry market, which you still see in Chinatown, by the way. One of the reasons I love walking through the Chinatown of San Francisco is that many of the Chinese remind me of my relatives when I was younger. You know, yelling at each other in a butcher market. No, I don't want that chicken. Yo, keep that chicken. I want that chicken. I saw the same thing going on when I was a kid. The women wouldn't pick the shrimpy little chicken that was depressed in the back complaining of allergies. They wanted that chicken that strutted and ran away from the butcher with the axe. That's the chicken they wanted. It's terrible. And you'd see these women knock the chicken's head off and it would run without a head with the blood spurting out. It was horrible as a child to watch that. As a city boy, I got to tell you, the women didn't blink. It didn't mean nothing to them. And then they ripped the feathers out and you take it home. Now, that was a live chicken. I guarantee you didn't eat antibiotics either. They didn't even know what an antibiotic was in those days. So I realized that I actually grew up on Whole Foods in a strange way. And now, of course, virtually everything I eat is this, that, packaged. So no wonder we feel denatured and we don't have much energy. So although I tend to eat a lot of organic food as often as possible at home anyway, all my fruit's organic, all my vegetables are organic, blah, blah, blah. Hippie chickens I get with the degrees. No this, no that. But they're still old in the package, right? So I decided, you know what? Bread slows you down. You love bread. My mother loved bread. She lived to 88. Don't give me this no-carb business. Stop being a fool. Okay? You know, bread is the staple of life. You gotta be realistic here. Stop with the idiocy. I see people eating diets. You can't believe it. No wonder they look the way they do and they need medication. But I decided to eat a little less bread, so I substituted steamed broccoli for breakfast. I feel so good, I'm frightened. I feel like Buddy Hackett when he went in the Army, I told you. I don't understand it. I don't have a headache. I don't have a sinus problem. I feel optimistic. This is bad. This is so unusual for me. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I'll be right back.
Savage.
A few moments on the Savage Nation, we have Congressman Michelle Bachmann, who stands by her gangster government charge. She said the president holds anti-American views, and she calls it a gangster government. I hope she didn't get this from reading Trickle-Up Poverty, but I couldn't agree with her more. Number of health care law waivers climbs above 1,000. Look at this on michaelsavage.com. Obamacare is so corrupt, it makes the word Banana Republic sound respectable as to what this man has turned our country into. In other words, if you have enough money or influence, you can buy your way out of Obamacare. This guy, if I say he's a clown, he gives clowns a good name. I mean, this is beyond a clown. The man is running the country as though it's a private business, and you can buy and sell your way in or out of laws. What is this all about, people are saying? How long does this go on till people say the guy is incompetent? That the American people fundamentally fired Obama in November. They fired him. They said no to him. They threw out Nancy Pelosi. Why did they throw Pelosi out? Why did they throw out almost 100 congressmen and governors? Why? Because of Obama. So what, he stays there now another 2 years with the wrecking ball, taking apart one great piece of legislation after another, putting in one corrupt criminal law after another? What kind of system is this? You know, crimes and misdemeanors? Well, he hasn't committed a crime so far as I know. He hasn't committed a misdemeanor unless you consider taking the Constitution apart, paragraph by paragraph, a crime or a misdemeanor. This is crazy. And I'd rather hear this talked about rather than the birthing. I'd rather talk about the man's corruption, and I'd rather hear talk about Obama's lack of connection to reality than talk about where he was born, frankly. And that's all I want to say about that at this time. By the way, how's the ganja from Kenya? Tucson, Arizona. Bob, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. I just wanted to tell you your interview with Donald Trump was the best I have ever heard. It was so refreshing to hear two knowledgeable men discuss the situation of the United States at the present time. You did.
I thought it was very good because I asked straight-up questions that were not scripted. He didn't give me questions. I would never take an interview that way. And he didn't come prepared for them. He answered them the way he thought they should be answered, which is a big statement from someone who wants to run for office. And I hope he does, because I could never see answers like that coming from any of the other candidates. Would you?
Well, I'm totally looking forward to the next election, because to have somebody like that in the office with the business acumen that he has, and he is a leader, that would be fantastic for.
That's what I think. I hope he does run. I really do. I thank you for that observation. Albany, New York. Mike, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you never cease to amaze me. I was speaking to my wife the other day about evolution and creation not being mutually exclusive, and I believe that also. And I believe both could have occurred, and it just amazes me as a lifelong liberal that you and I see eye to eye on many, many things.
Because I think that you're overly defining yourself. When you take on a label of saying, I'm a lifelong liberal, you have to be cautious about such a statement, because in that politics change and issues change and the times change, I would guess that some of your positions have changed through time, haven't they?
Oh, yes, Michael, but my point is really about the evolution and versus creation. And regardless of my political beliefs, I was amazed that I had never heard anybody else say that, and I believed that for a long time. And
Are you shocked that I, a knuckle dragger, would come up with something like that?
Oh, no, Michael, I listen to your show all the time, and I think it's great. I really enjoy your show.
Well, you know what it is, why you and other liberals are listening to this show, even though politically we may disagree on virtually everything, is because you know that I am thoughtful and I'm a free thinker. That's what it comes down to.
Absolutely, Michael. And I listen to all the other shows and just to keep an open mind and hear the other side of an other opinion.
Right. No, you have to. You have to in a time like this, where both sides are filled with a lot of malarkey and a lot of public relations. I think it's very important to listen to as many intelligent voices as we can. Now, that being said, there's only a limit to how much people can take of it also. You know, you can get oversaturated from politics, don't you think?
Absolutely, Michael.
I'm sending you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty, but since you are a liberal, don't go away, Mike. It's a free book, number one, which I know you like. We're sending it in a plain brown wrapper, so that your neighbors do not excommunicate you from the condominium association.
Very good, Michael. Thank you, and I always enjoy your show.
Stay on the line. We'll send that out to you soon. Oh, God. Life is good. People are wonderful, and business is great. Remember those days? I mean, that was only... When was that bumper sticker out? My, have we fallen from that. Life is good, people are wonderful, and business is great. That was like, what, 80s? The last I saw that bumper sticker. Now you'll see a bumper sticker, life is bad, people stink, and business is horrible. That would be a bumper sticker that would sell right now. But look what's in the news. Peter King, Congressman King, wants to run a hearing on the Muslim radicalization. Straightforward question, nothing wrong with that. All of a sudden, the rent-a-mobs come out of the woodwork. There's hateful Al Sharpton rallying to block a House hearing on radical Muslims. My one question is, what have they got to hide? Why should they be so frightened of a congressional hearing on Muslims' role in homegrown terrorism? Can anyone explain what these pressure groups are hiding that they're so defensive about it? I would think they would welcome such a hearing. I would think that any rational, America-loving Muslim would say, oh, I can't wait for this hearing so that our name can be cleared and our religion can be cleared. I really look forward to the hearing, but there they are. The haters are in the gutters again.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. The last hour we had Donald Trump. This is one of these great days, you know, Right now we have Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. I don't want to say congressman because it wouldn't be right. And the congresswoman, who is one of my favorite, described the government as a gangster government, which, of course, you know I agree with that. And why do I say a thing like that? Just for effect? She characterized the Obama administration as a gangster government. And she said, I don't take back my statement on gangster government. She says, I think that there have been actions that have been taken by this government that I think are corrupt. She said during her appearance on NBC's Meet the Press. Now, before the congresswoman appears on the show, I want to say something. There are over 1,000 groups that have been given waivers from Obamacare. If that does not qualify as a toll booth into the administration, and if that doesn't typify what a gangster government is, I'd like to know what does. That's my opinion, and I think it speaks for itself. Michelle Bachmann, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael Savage. Well, I do agree with that, and I think that this newest revelation that came out, that Obama, Pelosi, and Reid hid over $105 billion in spending in the Obamacare bill and didn't bother to tell the Senate, didn't bother to tell the House, and didn't bother to tell the American people. They broke it up.
Wait, say that again. $105 billion in the healthcare overhaul? What do you mean? It's going to cost another $105 billion?
Yeah, what they did is they already appropriated money to implement the bill between now and 2019. So for the next 8 years, $5 billion will go out the door this year. It's done. When members of Congress took their vote on Obamacare, nobody told them they were also voting at the same time to fund the thing for the next 8 years. But that's what was in this bill. This is an outrage, and
yes,
it's shocking. We just found this out in a report that came out from the Congressional Research Service. Nobody had any idea. When Pelosi said we have to pass the bill to know what's in it, she wasn't kidding. This is sick. This is
yes. Dangerous. No, it's awful. But when you said gangster government, you were referring to which particular actions, if you care to clarify that?
Well, the waivers would be one of them, the 1,000 waivers now. They weren't.
Yeah, but Congresswoman, how could you buy a waiver from an administration? How does somebody do that? You mean they just show up and they lobby for a waiver?
Well, let's face it, we all know how it works. Special interest groups give money to these politicians. The politicians, in turn, get into power, and then they vote or they give goodies to their special interest friends. It's a perfect circle. And we saw that happen with Wall Street. We saw that happen with the GM and the Chrysler takeover. And with all of these takeovers that Obama has done, you notice that he hasn't gotten rid of any of these private industries that he's bought shares in. The government still owns it. As a matter of fact, in Obamacare, the government completely took over loans to schools or loans to kids when they go to college. Now government controls that. It used to be private industry. The government took over that whole industry sector. This is what Obama's been doing.
Well, you know that I believe that what you're saying is 100% true, and I think it's characterized by the 1,000 waivers. I think that speaks, you know, they say a picture is worth 1,000 words. I'll turn it around, and I would say that 1,000 waivers are worth 1,000 words, because how can anyone, liberal or conservative, not see that that's corrupt? It's unfair. How can you have a bill that's passed and before it's even law already, people bought their way out of the law? That's like buying favors from a government.
Well, that's crony capitalism, and that's Barack Obama's specialty. It doesn't have anything to do with this magnificent country or the fact that we are based on the rule of law. Now it's the rule of Obama, and that's not good for America. It's a real difference in the way that government is done. It's based upon how well connected you are politically. We're supposed to be equal under the law. Now it's some of us are more equal than others if we're better politically connected. That's
yeah.
What I can't stand about this $105 billion that they secretly put in this bill. They can't get away with that. They have to give the money back. They have to give it back.
Now, you are the House Tea Party Caucus founder. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What is a House Tea Party Caucus? How does that work?
Well, we are not the spokesman. We are not setting an agenda. We're not telling tea parties what to do. Our function is to listen. We're not the mouthpiece. We're the earpiece. We listen to what people have to say. I felt that the Tea Party is a legitimate movement. They were maligned all across the country, and I wanted to give them legitimacy by allowing members of Congress to come together. And we asked people to come in and speak to us from around the country, from various Tea Party groups. We just had one about a week ago, and we asked them about this whole budget process. And they were not real impressed with the amount of money that we were cutting out of the budget. What they wanted to make sure is that we do not implement Obamacare. Then right after that, this bombshell came out that too late, Obama and Pelosi and Reid already pre-funded Obamacare, and they didn't bother to tell the senators or the House members. I mean, do you remember ever once during this debate that, oh, by the way, we're spending $105 billion to implement Obamacare? I don't. You won't find one story about it.
No, but you represent the will of the people. There's no question that, no, the Tea Party candidates that have just been elected really represent the new wave of the American mood. And what's amazing to me is how you are being roundly attacked. The pictures that they're running of you are unbelievable. The angles they're using from the Associated Press stories, they're trying to smear you in every way possible. And all I can say is you really do have the will of the people behind you. Don't let them weaken you. Now, I would... Did you know I invited you March 24th to something, but you can't make it? I just want to know if you ever got that invitation.
You know, I didn't, but the scheduler did get it, and apparently I had already agreed to something months ago, and I couldn't break it to come. I would have loved to have come.
I think you would have been so happy there, but I'm not going to, you know, put it on the air. I only mention it because Congressman John Culberson's coming in from Texas to this dinner. I thought it would be such a shock for you to show up at the San Francisco Society, a museum society dinner with me. It would be amazing. You want to make some ripples out here in this liberal bastion. Boy, would that be fun.
Well, and I could come by Skype or I could come by telephone. But when I gave my word to these other people that I'd come, I just can't break it, you know.
No. I understand. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. Are you being asked to run for office or not? I mean, for office. Of course, you're a congresswoman. I mean, for higher office. Is there any movement to have you run as a candidate, either for the top or the second top position?
Yes, there is.
Would you consider running as a vice presidential candidate if that were offered to you?
Well, I'd have to see. You know, when the time comes up, I would have to see. I couldn't say now, you know, if I would or not.
What do you think of a Trump? What do you think of a Trump Bachman ticket? I just had Donald Trump on the show, so I'm really just playing around because I said to him, "What do you think of a Trump Alan West ticket?" And he was very complimentary about Alan West. I didn't bring up a Trump Bachman because I think you're interested in the top slot personally.
Yeah. Well. I haven't made a decision whether I will or whether I won't. What I'm trying to do is go into a lot of these primary states because these people have a huge decision, and I'm trying to talk about the big issues. No matter who our candidate is, we need to have a very tough individual who's willing to do what's going to need to be done, even if it means only serving one term. We've got to get somebody with guts who's going to get in there and not be willing, and somebody who's willing to call things for what they are, and really just do the work that has to be done. I mean, we need somebody who understands the times that we live in and who knows what to do about it, who has the solutions and who has the political guts to carry it out.
We understand that Mr. Obama went golfing this weekend while Libya was on fire. If you were president, would you have already initiated a no-fly zone over Libya?
You know, I think that we have an opportunity in Libya now like we haven't had before. My issue right now is the fact that I sit on the House Intelligence Committee. We are charged with the nation's classified secrets. I'm in a very unique situation, and I'm not even allowed to confirm things that you can read in the newspaper. That's just part of being on that committee. So I'm in a difficult position to be able to comment right now.
Well, then let me ask a question. You can comment on it. Which side should we be on with Libya? Gaddafi's an evil man, but it seems to me that although it looks like the rebels, so-called, are the ordinary people, there are indications that they are, in fact, being backed by al-Qaeda. So can you clarify that for the American people?
You mean if they're backed by al-Qaeda?
Yeah, who exactly are the rebels? I don't believe this is just spontaneous revolution by people who went to Harvard. I mean, who is backing the rebels? Where'd they get their weapons from? And frankly, if Gaddafi were thrown out, who would take over in Libya?
Right, and that's something that I am not allowed to comment on, just because of the access to information that I have. I'm sorry,
interesting.
I'm not trying to dodge your question.
No, okay, I wouldn't press it. I will. I certainly respect your inability to respond owing to national security considerations. Then let's go to something that perhaps would be of interest to the listeners. Representative Peter King, he's going to hold hearings on the radicalization of Muslims in America. He's being attacked by all of the demagogues on the left. You certainly back King on these hearings, I would think.
1,000%, I do. I think it's I applaud him, and I'm thankful he's doing this. I back him up 1,000%. This is overdue and needed. He's doing a great job.
And Congresswoman, what I said in the last hour was this: if I were a law-abiding Muslim, I would welcome these hearings to clear the air about this subject. And in fact, I think the hearings are an opportunity for us to learn that in fact there are mosques that are complying with our FBI and other investigatory agencies, if that is the case. But there must be an awful lot of, let us say, there may be many individuals hiding in these mosques who really, frankly, need to be exposed. Because I know common sense would dictate, rather, that if someone came over to this country to do us harm from one of those Middle Eastern countries, where would they hide? Would it be a church, a synagogue, or a mosque? The first place they would go would be a mosque. You know it and I know it. I don't see what the problem is here. We're at war. They've declared us their enemy. Why should we not have hearings on the radicalization of Muslims, I'd like to know?
Well, of course, and it was only 2 weeks ago in Dallas that a 20-year-old from Saudi Arabia was in the process of trying to, he had targets, and he was trying to blow up either reservoirs or nuclear power plants, and he had all of the supplies put together to create a bomb that was comparable to that in Oklahoma City. This is ongoing, and thankfully we've been able to foil so many of these plots with good intelligence. But this was, you know, this was known in the public, and I think, again, last week when we had two of our soldiers shot in Germany, I think the president's response was clearly lacking. The individual that shot the soldiers last week shouted Allahu Akbar before he did it. And I think that, you know, it's obvious to all of us to see, but we can't apply political correctness to American safety.
In fact, the Europeans are calling that killing of our airmen on that bus by the fanatic from Albania or Kosovo an act of terrorism, and our own government is denying that there's any terrorism. It's shocking, frankly. Congresswoman Bachmann, we remain loyal supporters of all of your efforts. Please don't let the liberals get you down.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate all of your listener support. They were so helpful to me in this last campaign. I was Nancy Pelosi's number one target to defeat, and your listeners really came up and helped me in this situation. I wouldn't be back without them, quite frankly, and I appreciate you, and I appreciate them.
Illegitimi non caberundum. Thank you very much for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I want to give you a quote, okay? And here it is. The position is ridiculous. The relief momentary and the cost abominable. Now, I'm not talking about talk radio. The position is ridiculous. The relief momentary and the cost abominable. He was, of course, talking about relations between man and woman, I assume. And that was Lord Chesterfield, who lived several hundred years ago, born in 1694 and died in 1773. Quite a wit, British statesman, and very funny. I was quoting this all weekend with a few people that I ran into, and they really got a kick out of it. I don't know anyone who wouldn't laugh at that. The position is ridiculous, the relief momentary, and the cost abominable. Women especially get a kick out of that one. They look back on their husbands, and then they get stuck. So I looked up Lord Chesterfield, and I was looking at some of his other quotes, and you say, hundreds of years ago, you know, what good is that now, right? Well, I'm going to read you some of them. I never do this. Are you ready for this? Let's see. An injury is much sooner forgotten than an insult. Hey. As fathers commonly go, it is seldom a misfortune to be fatherless, and considering the general run of sons, as seldom a misfortune to be childless. I think it's cute. Let's see. distrust all those who love you extremely upon a very slight acquaintance and without any visible reason. That would be Madoff, right? Distrust all those who love you extremely upon a very slight acquaintance and without any visible reason. Remember the America? Oh, I love you, man. Remember the 60s? I love you. Remember all those politicians who would say, I love you, or the entertainers at the end of a show, I love you. Remember those? Let's see what else. Good humor is the health of the soul. Sadness is its poison. You know, for years of my life, mainly when I was a teenager, no, a late adolescent, early manhood thing, I used to read aphorisms of intelligent people. I thought that it would make me smarter. None of them worked. Absolutely none of them worked, by the way. Aphorisms don't work. The only thing that works is some money in your pocket. You quote Michael Savage on that one. A weak mind is like a microscope, which magnifies trifling things but cannot receive great ones. Does anyone read aphorisms anymore? The day is over. I see people walking around with their Blackberries, looking in their palm all the time. They're like morons. They're like idiots walking around. They're like bumblebees that have been sprayed with Raid. They walk down a street in bizarre, zigzaggy fashion, looking in their palm like it's the Holy Grail. This has to come to an end, this phase, don't you think? You think that the cell phone, the wireless device thing is going to come to an end where people are going to eschew them and start becoming humans again? You like sitting at dinner with someone who has a cell phone on the table? They put it down next to the napkin? I don't know about you, but I don't want to eat dinner. I tell them either shut it off or I'm leaving. You know, I don't really want to sit with someone they're texting underneath the table. I'm just bringing stuff up, that's all. Things that bother me. A novel must be exceptionally good to live as long as the average cat. Lord Chesterfield. None of these are as good as that one, though. The position is ridiculous, the relief momentary, and the cost abominable. That's his best. That's the only one he's remembered for. So I'm looking at your favorite, quote, authors, you know, like they're showing on this list of people who've said things that we should remember. Abraham Lincoln, Albert Einstein, Benjamin Franklin. Then they list in with them the people they put in there, like Maya Angelou, you hear? You never heard of Maya Angelou. What is she doing in there? I don't understand this. They put people I never heard of in there. Where's Michael Savage? Liberalism is a mental disorder. That's a quote that should live through the ages. But since the liberals control all of these sites, you won't see it anywhere. You know what I mean? Mark Twain. He's in the same category as her? Mark Twain, they put in the same list as Maya Angelou, Obama's favorite non-poet. Unbelievable to me. Yogi Berra, they put in the same list with William Shakespeare. Unbelievable the kind of idiocy that passes for intelligence today. Golf is back. Obama's 60th outing as president, where he was said to say, yes. And when they said, Mr. President, what do you have to say about Libya? And he said, Libya is nothing but a big sand trap. That's what he should have said. If it was Reagan playing golf, they would have harassed them. Not Obama, though. No, he's allowed to play golf. He has spent 2 months of his presidency on the golf course. It's the 60th time golfing. The rounds take 5 hours, including motorcading back and forth to the course. Bush gave up golfing in 03, explaining why he did it in an 08 interview. He said, I don't want some mom whose son may have recently died to see the commander-in-chief playing golf. Thank you, President Bush. Bush went on and said, I feel I owe it to the families to be in solidarity as best as I can with them, and I think playing golf during a war just sends the wrong signal. Some think Obama should play, should follow Bush's example, don't you? Yeah, good luck. Oh, yeah. POTUS's golfing buddies include Ben Finkelbinder of the press office, Marvin Nicholson, the president's trip director, what kind of trips are they on, and David Katz, a Department of Energy staffer. Great. Isn't that terrific? The president's 60th outing as president as a golfer. That means he has spent 2 months of his presidency on the golf course. Yeah, you got change, all right.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Hey, to February is $223 billion. Let me repeat that. $223 billion. That is larger than the entire 2007 deficit. We have a president who is out of control. We have a president who is out to lunch. We have a president who needs to be removed from office. We have a president who is destroying America at every turn. Charlie Sheen fired by Warner Brothers. I'd like to read tomorrow. Barack Obama fired by the American people. In fact, by the last election, he was fired by the American people. But there were no consequences to the man's crazed behavior, right? Also news today, Obama says he's going to restart trials for terrorists in Guantanamo, not in New York. I guess he's seen a light. Congressman King is going to look at the radicalization of Muslims. The White House, of course, praised Muslims ahead of the probe, and Al Sharpton is rioting, or shall I say protesting, trying to stop the hearings on the radicalization of Muslims. Makes you wonder, huh? Oil going to the roof, then dropping back, up and down, up and down, up and down. How about Obamacare? Oh, the number of individuals and groups waived from Obamacare now tops 1,000. Can you believe this? Over 1,000 waivers for Obamacare. Now, what kind of federal law is it that anyone can get out of if they pay enough money? This is not a banana republic anymore. I don't even have the right word for what kind of republic it is, because it isn't. Zimbabwe to sell yellow cake uranium to Iran. How do you like that? Yellow cake uranium again. Yellow cake uranium. Where's George Bush now that we need him? A WMD. Michelle Bachmann calls the government a gangster government. I guess she's been listening to the Savage Nation. Let's take a look at michaelsavage.com and see what's made it to the website of websites. And incidentally, Lord Chesterfield had it right when he said the position is ridiculous, the cost abominable, the relief momentary. Now, of course, I'm not referring to my website when I say that. But the fact is, the position is not ridiculous, the cost is free, and the relief is momentary. That is true. So if you go to michaelsavage.com, we see the headline, "See Hawaii Governor's Terse Letter About Firing of Health Chief." Old Neil Abercrombie. Wonder why he fired the new health chief. Could be something to do with those records about Obama's birth, huh? Michelle Bachmann stands by gangster government charge. Right on. All power to the people. China strengthens military budget. Ah, what the heck? They make the sneakers, don't they? Soaring gasoline prices. Is that Obama's plan all along? Is that part of the professor's delusional theory that the U.S. economy can thrive on banana peels? That is green power. Al Sharpton rallies to block House hearing on radical Muslims. Sean Penn, Charlie Sheen, what do they have in common? They both are using Haiti to push their self-images. Nothing, they may have some other things in common, but this is a family show. Saudis draft 10,000 troops to prepare for a Muslim uprising. Wow. Hillary Clinton praises Israel-hating Al Jazeera. New hairdo, though. Inmates rolling dough from $35 million lawsuit. Liberalism is a mental disorder. By the way, if you want to know about the hypocrisy of the UN, you don't have to go any further than last Friday when Iran officially became a member of the UN Commission on the Status of Women. Iran! A member of the UN Commission on the Status of Women. Not one word from the National Organization for Women. Italy makes immigrants speak Italian to work. Moms grieve over deaths from oxycodone pain pills in Florida. Terrible story. Terrible tragedy. Naked party at Yale prompts sexual assault investigation. San Francisco suspends cops because they arrested drug dealers. In Syosset, New York, the school administrator makes over $500,000 a year. Public servant, huh? Cheating skyrockets at UK universities. Really? Shocking. And finally, on the bottom of michaelsavage.com, Savage ratings are soaring on WOR and elsewhere in America. All this and more on the website. Well, anyway, the big news today is not the war, not the bankruptcy of America, not oil prices. It's that Warner Brothers has fired Charlie Sheen from Two and a Half Men. Apparently, he could never be more than that half a man, so they got rid of him. The other two men are looking for other jobs as well. So the half a man has finally gotten it. They said that his manic media campaign against the studio bosses finally paid off. Warner Brothers says that they fired him after careful consideration and is effective immediately. No decision has been made in the show's future without its so-called star. They could always use Sean Penn, right? In a text to the Associated Press, Charlie Not-So-Sheen responded with the F-word and said they lose, followed by the word trolls. Asked if he planned to sue, Sheen texts back big. Asked for his next move, Sheen texts a big one. Answer. Every addiction specialist says the next big one will be him in the gutter. In fact, they say the only difference between Charlie Sheen and an average drunk in the street is his father's money and connections. But that would be jealousy, wouldn't it? I guess they're going to call the new show by another title, babe. Well, if I guess they're going to call it now Two Men.
They lost half. They got two left.
There you go. Before we leave the subject of this out-of-control exhibitionist, let us define exhibitionism. It's a compulsive desire to attract attention to oneself, especially by absurd or exaggerated behavior or boasting, World English Dictionary. Now, it's not limited to Charlie Sheen. We all know that the hemorrhoid on Fox News is an exhibitionist in the same sense. In fact, the left-wing New York Times claims that part of the appeal of this character on Fox is that he seems as if he's about to lose his marbles every day. But recently, Charlie Sheen has been giving him a run for his money. Sheen's antics have been captivating the empty skirts, the same way the hemorrhoid once captivated Fox News audiences. And now Sheen has started his own web show, which is drawing a huge number of viewers. So essentially, Charlie Sheen is competing with the hemorrhoid of Fox News. Now, the bottom line is that anyone who wants a TV show is on some level mentally disordered. Who in the world would want all the insanity associated with putting their face on television on a daily basis? It would completely change and destroy your personal life. Radio is not only safer, it's saner. Radio is a medium where it's much harder to distort the truth. While radio can have a theatrical presentation, that is true, television has a thespian presentation, focusing primarily on images rather than substance. Radio is a theater of the mind. It can only use sound and words to influence. Television relies on images, and the image lies more readily than words. Radio is an expression of thought, since there is no action. Since there's no action to see, there's no acting. But the actors on television, whether they're in sitcoms like Charlie Sheen or on cable news shows like ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and Fox News, they're in the same process, basically. And while the ratings are plummeting on cable, and while the leprechaun is sold out to Obama, nevertheless, I remain yours truly, Michael Savage.
Savage.
Obama White House to brew more beer. Caught the attention of several White House watchers that homemade beer was served at the White House Super Bowl party in February. Beverages poured during the party included the following beers. And they're using, to show you how organic they are, they're using honey that was raised at the White House itself. Honey from the White House beehive was used to make the first batch of homemade ale. Would the first lady ever consider growing hops in her vegetable garden? Believe me, I've thought about it, said White House Assistant Chef Sam Koss. It has definitely crossed my mind. So this is a definite advancement to the presidency. They're brewing beer in the White House. Now, it sounds like a frat boy, like a frat party. Parties every night, brewing beer. Remember with Carter, I mean, if you were to name some brews that they make in the White House, Obama's brews. With Jimmy Carter, we saw Billy Beer. I guess with Obama, we can name it Silly Beer. Or some other names for the home brews could be Bolshie Brew. Or how about Leftist Lager? Why not Lenin's Choice? Or perhaps Carl's Hefeweizen would be a big hit over there for the next Super Bowl party. Or if that's a little too esoteric, since the White House is now brewing beer, they can put one out called Barry's Brew. Or Ayers Ale. How about that? A little Ayers Ale? And finally, I could suggest another title for them, another label, Reverend Wright's Light. That would work. So we're trying to lighten it up a bit here because the news is so dismal. It's beyond belief. He's metal. Very, very noble of Kim. And he's very concerned about racism, as we all are. Very concerned about hate, as we all are. And here it is right under his nose, and he says nothing about it. So what would you like to talk about? The two American servicemen executed in Frankfurt by a devout Muslim? In Frankfurt, Germany? Not a word from Obama about the Muslim connection? He just regretted the death of the servicemen? How do you feel about that one? Kansas City, Doug, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm just overwhelmed with grief at the loss of two more heroes in the shadow of Fort Hood, knowing nothing will be changed, nothing will be done about it. And you know how smart you have to be a pirate. These were the best of the best. I think how proud their parents were, and these guys are gone, unarmed.
That's right. Well, they're just statistics to the president. The bigger issue is that they were killed by a devout Muslim from Kosovo, whose brethren were allegedly liberated from the allegedly hostile Serbs. That's the real irony of this whole story.
You remember the rage you felt when the 13 and 4, these people fought a war and came home, survived that, to be killed by one of their supposedly own, and nothing's been changed. They're still unarmed.
That's right. Well, after Fort Hood, I think that they should disarm the entire military, even on the battlefield. Since so many of the soldiers are on medications, they're liable to hurt themselves. Since the new military under Gates and the whatever his name is,
the one with the great voice, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff,
since so many soldiers are on so many drugs, I think there's a good reason to disarm them even on the battlefield, because they're liable to hurt themselves. That's the new military under Obama. New York, WOR, Pat, go ahead, you're on the Savage Nation.
You know, Michael, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said about a half an hour ago about Obama. You said he's not there. Every psycho talking head is trying to slice him and dice him and figure out what kind of personality he is. And I think we just got to take him for who he is and what he says. He's lawless, he's recalcitrant, and he's indifferent, okay? And I don't think he'll run again, because life will be much better later on than it is in the White House. I mean,
well, think of the corporate jobs that he and the First Lady could get after this.
Two people elevated both to their level of incompetence. I mean, it's going to be a rope-a-dope between now and the next election.
But the world is burning. We don't have 2 years to wait. There's nobody there. We don't have 2 years to wait. There has to be a national outcry for Obama to resign and for Biden to take over. He has to step down. He's incompetent.
I happen to agree with that, but let me finish what I want.
There has to be a national campaign not to impeach him, but to make him resign and to put Biden in. We didn't say hold another election. We didn't say put a Republican in. We said put Biden in, get rid of the man who was not there. He has to resign for the sake of America. He's over his head. He cannot do this job. It's the toughest job on earth, and he's obviously not up to it. They're brewing beer in the White House. Could you believe that story, Pat?
Michael, all I can do is laugh in desperation. But what I'm also trying to make another point based upon what I heard you ask a prior caller. Think about at Fort Hood what he did when he came out to make a speech. It took him 2 minutes. After giving high fives, this is what I mean about this guy being indifferent and off. He was given high fives before he could even observe the dead. I mean, it infuriates me.
Wait, who was giving high fives to whom?
Obama.
High fives to who?
To who was in the audience. He was acknowledging.
Oh, you mean he thought it was a campaign rally, the Fort Hood, at the Fort Hood massacre announcement? He thought it was a campaign rally?
Can go back and check the tapes. It was either 2-3 minutes, him doing high fives.
Well, you know what? We all know Obama's incompetent and dangerous. I wrote a whole book on it. There have been about 5 books since then about his danger. So what do we do now? We all know he's dangerous. We all know he's a socialist. We all know he's a puppet of very powerful money changers. So what do we do now? Green Eggs and Ham by Dr. Seuss. Brewing beer in the White House. Farrakhan says Jews are pushing U.S. into war. And the president is nowhere to be found. Where's Waldo? The question I kept asking about Bush, who was on vacation. But by comparison, George Bush was George Washington compared to this one.
You know, I look back, and it seems that each president is so much worse than the one before them. You don't know how it happens. Remember how bad Clinton was? You say horrible. Then the one after him was worse than Clinton. Then the one after, it just gets worse. It doesn't get better. So here we are. Forbes says Obama is Carter. And we wake up, in a way, it's a strange irony that they're brewing beer in the White House. With Carter, we had Billy Beer. Now with Obama, look at the beers we're going to have, as I said. I read the list before. Silly Beer, Bolshie Beer, Leftist Lager, Lenin's Choice, Carl's Hefeweizen, Barry's Brew, Ayer's Ale, and Reverend Wright's Light. Very funny. Very, very funny. Very funny indeed. Not one word today from a Republican or a Democrat about a lack of help for those in Libya. And there is an interesting point, though. Well, who cares about them? It's all about the oil anyway. I mean, what, you want to topple Gaddafi and see Al-Qaeda come in? Which devil do you want to do business with? The devil you know or the devil you don't know? We told you that Soros's toppling of regimes in the Middle East would bring about, the Muslim Brotherhood and fanatics that would make the dictators look like a benevolent by comparison. And, of course, we were 100% right. So you don't know what to do at the end of the day, but you think a president would articulate some of it for you?
Savage.
I've talked over and over again how it seems inflation is driving up the prices of everything, from gas to food to other commodities. This is a repeat of the Carter years. Joining us right now is a good friend of the show and a sponsor, my friend Craig Smith. He's the chairman of Swiss America, to talk about what he sees going on here. Craig Smith, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you so much for having me back, and thank you for tackling an issue that a lot of people in America don't understand. We hear talk every day now about inflation. We hear about gasoline prices going up and food going up and how our cost of living is going up. And most people think that inflation, Michael, is nothing more than your gas price going from $3 to $4. So it costs you more to drive your car every day. Or your grocery bill, which used to be $150 a week, now costs you $200 a week. So, in essence, it costs you more to feed your family. But inflation is so much more than that. Inflation can actually be used by the government to generate revenues.
Well, how does that work?
Before I go to that, we need to remember that inflation can be extremely dangerous, Michael. So one has to ask himself a question: why do the politicians and the central bankers print reckless amounts of money knowing that a catastrophe could be the end result? Well, the answer is simple, Michael, in that inflation is many things in addition to the devaluation of currency. Inflation can actually be a tool, an ideology, actually a form of taxation that secretly extracts the earnings not only of Americans, but also of unsuspecting people in other parts of the world and other countries. A means, if you will, Michael, of wealth redistribution. Does that sound familiar from the conversation with Joe the plumber? It can be used as a mode of social engineering, a device to weaken some and strengthen others. But within a nation and the global community, it can be used as a way to seize and exercise power. And that's why recently, Michael, I wrote a white paper entitled "The Uses of Inflation, How Monetary Policy and Governance in the 21st Century is Going to Be Dictated by the Uses of Inflation." Actually, Michael, we went back and did some research, and we found an interesting article. In 1946, Beardsley Rummel, who was the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board at the time, wrote an article that was published in American Affairs magazines. It's titled, "Taxes for Revenue Are Obsolete."
What?
That's right. He basically said, look, if you print money, you don't need taxation. Now, of course, what held Mr. Rummel back from doing this was the fact that he was on a gold standard, and you couldn't print money without gold on supply at the Federal Reserve Bank or at Fort Knox. But floating the idea that inflation, the printing of money, could actually generate revenues more effectively than taxes should have caused every American to wake up and realize that the Fed has unbelievable power.
Exactly.
George Washington himself said, paper money has had the effect in your state that it will ever have to ruin commerce, to oppress the honest, to open the door to every species of fraud and injustice. And Michael, truer words could have never been spoken, because I believe today, and I document this all in a white paper that I put together with several footnotes, that the Fed, what the Fed is doing right now, is actually going to be devastating to the American economy and may well destroy the U.S. dollar. And it's not by mistake, it's by design, Michael.
Why do you say that?
Because one thing we've learned about studying inflations in the past, inflations always benefit debtors and it punishes creditors. It benefits people that live off debt, and it punishes people that work hard for their money. And look, who is the largest debtor nation in the world? The United States of America and the United States government. So if inflation benefits debtors, you would welcome inflation in. And that's exactly what's happening at our Federal Reserve Board. That's exactly what's happening as Mr. Bernanke pursued quantitative easing one with several trillions of dollars that went into saving businesses and creating crony capitalism like we've never seen before in this nation.
Right, right, right.
Our monetary policy that's coming out of the Federal Reserve has turned inflationary. Mr. Bernanke has said it with his own lips that he wants a target rate of 2% inflation to run in America. Well, unfortunately, Michael, Mr. Bernanke, once inflation gets started, will not be able to control a 2% inflation rate, and it's foolish to think that he can. That's why the uses of inflation in America will dictate future monetary policy, but more importantly, governance of our country in the 21st century. There is, beyond a shadow of a doubt right now, Michael, a tidal wave of money that is soon going to cause tremendous damage in this economy. If we go back to 1971, just to give you some basic numbers, what cost you $1 in 1971 cost you about $5.50 today. But if you want to see even a worse effect than that, a gallon of gas that cost you 27 cents back in 1973 cost you over $3 today.
Well, people would say that's just inflation making the cost of living go up.
Well, that's true, it does. But people forget that Mr. Carter embarked on inflation from 76 to 80. And next thing you know, we had 22% interest rates. We had 16% inflation. It was unbelievable what happened. It all started under Mr. Nixon with wage and price controls, went into Mr. Carter, and quite frankly, Michael, has continued all the way through presidents right up until Barack Obama. But Mr. Obama, being the smart politician that he is, recognized that the uses of inflation could be used as a tool for him to obtain the ideological future that he wanted for this nation. He realized that it would be a way to redistribute wealth, a mode of social engineering, as I said, Michael. And that's why if you look across the world today, Michael, we see it on the headlines every day, there is a race to the bottom for all currencies. Every currency is dropping in value, of nations that print money, because there was a lot of money that was printed to get us through the big crisis in 2008. That's why it's very hard to detect the drops in the U.S. dollar when everybody else's currencies are dropping with it. However, what happened during that, Michael? We saw gold go from 600 to 700 to 800 to 1300, now to over $1,400, and many people are saying 1580 to 1750 is the next step.
Why?
Because it's very apparent now that Mr. Bernanke and the Federal Reserve, in cooperation with our Congress and our President, is now embarked on inflation. Now, there is a hope here, Michael. There's a hope that the fresh blood and the new guns that have come to Washington, D.C. will put the brakes on government spending and will hold Mr. Bernanke accountable. We've seen in the last couple days his testimony before the Senate and now the House. People like Ron Paul and others are holding Mr. Bernanke accountable. They're asking him for specific numbers. They're asking him to even give them his definition of the word money. And he can't do it, Michael. Why? Because he has embarked on a policy that time immemorial has worked.
This is unbelievable to me.
Look, people forget in Germany, before the hyperinflation hit, inflation made the German people pretty happy. They had virtually zero unemployment, the economy was bustling, and it was right up until hyperinflation hit, and what happened? It wiped out the middle class and set the stage for a horrific person by the name of Adolf Hitler. Look at Argentina. It was the Paris of South America at the turn of the last century. Finest school systems, healthcare, great standard of living. Then they embarked on a path of inflation and became a third world nation. Once again, wiped out the middle class. And Michael, that's my big concern. That's why I so appreciate you giving me the time to discuss this with the Savage Nation. Because hyperinflation, which I do believe is going to happen in America, maybe not to the extent that we saw in Germany, but we're going to see inflation rates of 15, 16, 20%. It will not affect the super wealthy, Michael, and quite frankly, it won't affect the super poor. It's going to have a devastating impact on the middle class, the strength of our nation, the hard-working, honest people who play by the rules and pay their taxes are now going to have money taken away from them in the form of inflation.
How could this be going on?
You see, inflation, as I outline in my white paper, can be used as a form of taxation, evidenced by what the Federal Reserve Chairman said in 1946. They're very honest about all this. But what we have to understand is that the middle class should be the ones that are not punished, and yet they will be. And that's why I'm on a quest, if you will, Michael, to show the middle class. Look, we're going to hear a lot of class warfare going into the 2012 election. Tax the rich, tax the rich. And Michael, you know the numbers. If the Bush tax cuts were allowed to expire, it would have generated about $800 billion over the next 10 years by taxing the rich. But if the tax cuts that were extended to the middle class had expired, in that same 10 years, we would have generated $2.2 trillion, almost three times more than what you get from taxing the rich. The point is, Michael, there's a lot of wealth in the middle class in America. Our government needs money desperately. We are somewhere between $65 and $80 trillion upside down when you count long-term liabilities in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Therefore, the government has to find new resources of money. If they taxed everybody 100%, there's not enough money.
Unbelievable.
So in my report, I have a whole section that explains how the government, and not just the United States government, but other countries that have printed money, used inflation to tax people and take wealth from people in a form that not one person in a million can diagnose it's happened until it already occurred. So I'm grateful, Michael, that you're tackling an issue like this. It's like all the other definite decisions that you make to tackle truths in America, the things you bring to the Savage Nation of telling people the facts, because you know, Michael, that when the American people have the facts, the American people will make the right decisions. And that's why I wrote this white paper, Michael. And, of course, any of your Savage listeners can call our offices, 800-289-2646, or go on the web at SwissAmerica.com. They can get a copy of this white paper. It's important that America has the facts.
True.
And I'm convinced, Michael, that if we can educate the American people to what's happening deeper than the Federal Reserve, Michael, this isn't some conspiracy. This isn't something that's being done behind closed doors in smoke-filled rooms. This is being done in the light of day. Mr. Bernanke is discussing this right in front of our Congress and Senate. That's why I want to get this report into the Savage Nation listeners' hands so that they're educated.
Craig Smith, as usual, thanks for your insights and for being on the Savage Nation.
And Michael, once again, I can't thank you enough for what you do for America and what you do for your listeners, making sure that they have the proper education on the issues that we face so that they can make the proper decisions.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Mozart's Eine kleine Nachtmusik, Eine kleine Nachtmusik from 1787 in the Savage Nation. This is what Western civilization is all about. This is the antithesis of the barbarians that Obama seems to love so much. Listen to it. Listen to it and weep as you realize this all started. Well, let me backtrack a little bit. Let's just listen for a minute. So you see, I went to a cocktail party, so to speak, at a museum in San Francisco. And a museum which still displays pieces of art by some of the great masters of Western civilization in the middle of a city, San Francisco, which has dedicated itself to the destruction of all that is good about Western civilization. So as I stood there in the hall with works by the great artist Rodin, the great bronzes of Rodin, the man who created that great sculpture, the thinker, I think about what's going on. I think about the barbarians that our government seems to bend over backwards for. The throwbacks who have given the world nothing for thousands of years. The throwbacks who sit and seethe and create nothing but hatred. And as I watched the young ladies in the quartet, I stood there next to one of the Rodin sculptures, and I stood there with a glass of bad red wine, by the way, some of the poorest red wine I've had in years, but it was very cold out. And I watched the crowd of white people hovering around the buffet table as though they had not eaten in years. As the gates were opened, the barbarians broke in, and the barbarians devoured the quiche and the bad wine and the Swedish meatballs and the grapes and the cheese. I couldn't believe it. These are white people over 50, 60 years old, clamoring as though they had just been released from a concentration camp, clamoring as though they had not eaten in 5 years. But strangely enough, I was the only one who heard the music, at least I think so, because I took my glass of bad rotgut red wine, and I stood and watched these young ladies performing. Actually, there were three young ladies and a young man. And frankly, I started to shudder at the beauty of it. It just came right through me because I was standing around some of the greatest art, some of the greatest art that I love. I've always loved the Rodin sculptures. I've always loved the Rodin Gallery here at the Palace of the Legion of Honor. And I felt honored to stand there. But as I looked up at the ceiling and felt the music coming through me and watched the young ladies literally quivering, becoming part of the instrument themselves, somehow all I could think of was that the barbarians that this government under Obama is so interested in protecting, the barbarians who the Defense Department is on the side of the barbarians instead of our soldiers who would defend these young women, all I could think about is what these barbarians would do to these young women. They would put them in burkas and they wouldn't let them play the violin. They would smash Rodin statues. They would burn the paintings of Europe. And all I could think about was, how did this start? How did my great country, this once powerful nation, degenerate to such a point? Well, I remember how. I remember how, and I'm going to give a testimony right now. This all began with the feminist movement back in the 60s as they chanted, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civ has got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civilization has got to go." And now we have Obama. And now we have Janet Napolitano. And now we have the barbarians not at the gates, but inside the gates themselves. And what the barbarians inside the gates are trying to destroy was right there in front of my eyes. I thought of all the trial and error and research that went into making all of the great advances that Western civilization has given the world. And it made me again think about the barbarians at the gate who want to destroy all of this. It made me remember that because a single generation of weaklings and leftists had made us vulnerable to attack and attacked the very core of our civilization, that all the towering achievements of the West could be destroyed by a bunch of fanatics whose mindset has not changed for 1,000 years. While your ancestors were building the world, the ancestors of these fanatics were sitting by their scimitars and seething, creating nothing but hatred. Hatred for women, hatred for civilization, hatred for science, hatred for liberty itself. And so as I listened to the incredible music played by these young people last night, surrounded by the great works of Rodin, I realized that the throwbacks blew up 1,500-year-old Buddhist statues in Afghanistan once they took over Afghanistan. And if the barbarians of the gate had their way, they'd smash the sculptures, they'd ban the music being played, they'd put the women in burkas, they'd burn the paintings on the walls by all of the great European masters. And now let's go back to Mozart's Eine kleine Nacht music and listen to the feminists in the background of your mind chanting, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civ has got to go." Then take a look at who we have in the White House. Take a look at who we have in Homeland Security. Take a look at who we have in the Defense Department. And you'll understand that they've actually won. Now, here's a story that is not directly related, but it's somewhat related to what I just said to you. I know you're caught off guard because it's not Democrats bad, Republicans good. And it's not so clearly just simply Obama bashing that you can follow the dots. You see, the difference between my show and others is that the other shows, the so-called conservative shows, are like a John Nagy painting. You have dots that you follow, and you paint in the dots. Number one, you paint in green. Number nine, you put in a yellow. Number eight, you put in a blue. Number 10, you go to another color and you put it in. And presto, you come up with a patriot, a painting called patriotism.
Savage.